Ted Benna, known as the father of the 401k. What is like the 3-minute version of the story of you discovering the 401k?
I added two things to it that weren't in that piece of legislation. It was never intended to be what it is.
You're working on some new plan, I think can really move the needle.
Totally flexible. Unlike 401k.
Has Congress allowed this? Have lawyers looked over this?
I don't trust politicians.
What would you say to the people that say 401ks are a scam, you should do other things?
First of all, Caleb, fees are an issue. Unfortunately, it can be as high as 2.75%, which is, frankly, I call it thievery.
You made a point that I've never heard. Hey guys, it's Caleb Williams. Hey everyone, welcome back to a very special episode of the Better Wealth Show. I am here with a return guest, and it's a true honor to have you on, Ted Benna, known as the father of the 401k. We did an entire interview talking about the history. We promoted your book, which we'll make sure your book is in the link down below. But you are the person that discovered the 401k in the tax code, and now, trillions of dollars later that are in qualified plans, very much thanks to you. And so, Ted, thank you for being here. And I look forward to just diving into some of the things that you're currently working on, which I think is going to be fascinating. But I just love having conversations with people that are really moving the needle in this industry.
Well, thank you, Caleb. It's certainly a pleasure to be back again with you. I appreciate all that you do very much.
So I would highly encourage people to watch our original interview where you do a full and extensive history of how you discovered this. But what is the 3-minute version of the story of you discovering the 401k?
Well, probably the first thing is the fact that it was never intended to be what it is. I mean, it was added to the Internal Revenue Code. It was only a page and a half long. Caleb was just pretty amazing. And without getting into the details, I added two things to it that weren't in that piece of legislation. The first one was the ability to have a matching employer contribution. The second one was for employees to be able to put money into it themselves pre-tax by making their own contributions. And there wasn't anything there saying that thou shalt not. So, I moved forward with the expectation that they might be possible. And, fortunately, finally, Treasury embraced, enabled both of those things to be included. And, we helped get it launched. The first 401k savings plan we actually put in for our own little consulting company, which only had about 50 employees at the time. And, it was tough getting it rolled out, but eventually we started to get some good press coverage, and it began to get legs and caught on, and probably generated about $15 billion or so over all the years it's been in existence. So.
Do you remember the initial epiphany that you had where you're like, oh, this is going to be incredible? Because I remember at the time that you discovered this, taxes were super, super high. So it was like the epiphany that people could invest for their future while saving taxes in the present. Was that like the epiphany, or was there something else that really hit you that this could be something that so many people would adopt in their life?
Well, it was the fact that most of the Fortune 500 companies had already in place what were called thrift or savings plans. Employees put money into those after tax, and they got a match from their company. But most of the money just got spent, it wasn't invested long term. So I realized that I was going to be able to go out to those companies and say, hey, you could now add a pre-tax option for employees to be able to do a pre-tax rather than after tax. And the marginal tax rate at that point was around 70%. So I mean, I knew it wasn't going to be hard to get attention of the senior execs. Caleb.
Nice. So now, as you look back, it's been many years since the start of the 401k. You wrote a book on this. Again, we'll link that down below. What is your reflection back on the 401k? I know that a lot of people, had pensions and then they kind of used the 401k instead of a supplement. They kind of got rid of their pensions and went all in on the 401ks. As you reflect back, are you what are the pros that you see about 401k? But then what are some of the cons that you see, you know, looking back where we are today on how people are looking or using the 401k?
Well, the pros are, first of all, help convert spenders into savers.
Yep.
Yeah, by making that the first priority. And many employees, including me, you know, would have never accumulated what they did without, you know, that being possible. So it's a plan primarily, Caleb, that has helped middle-income Americans. You know, those, I would say, you know, earning between 50,000 and 200,000 or so, you know, those are the ones who have benefited the most from it. You know, the real top dogs, you know, the big companies, I mean, they get their big payoffs through stock options and, you know, other types of plans for executives. So that's the big plus. You know, the negatives, you know, that I have are the fact that too much money still escapes when employees change jobs. So I'd like to put a little cap on that, that money has to stay for retirement. You know, the other is the fact that roughly half the workforce still does not have any employer-sponsored plan. States have been mandating that they do that, and that's growing, but, you know, still has a long ways to go. So I'd like to see employers being required to offer a plan. Not hard to do that. You know, a payroll deduction IRA, for example, is a very easy, no-cost plan, you know, for employees to set up. And then the other issue is there's still a lot of employees that, frankly, aren't able to save on their own. You know, even minimum wage earners, when you get a bump up from $15 to $20 an hour, you know, the statistics are showing it's still getting spent. And so that's kind of where I'm focusing now is, you know, ways of doing other things, you know, other than just the 401k, you know, to help people.
Yeah. And we're going to dive into that in a second. I appreciate you sending me details on the wheat grains incentive plan. When I read the initial thought of it, I kind of laughed out loud because I'm like, is this for real? But then as I read through it, I started realizing the brilliance of setting up this incentive plan. And I know you're going to dive into it in a second. So I just want people to know, like, we're going to look at some of the things that you're working on here in the future that I think can really move the needle for employers and their employees. But I want to just go back to the 401k. And pretty much what I hear you saying is the pros is it's taken spenders into savers because it's created automatic, like the money, you don't even see the money. It's going in before you receive it. And I think I would 100% agree that the majority of Americans need that because they would spend the difference and they're not disciplined. And so the fact that they can do that, the fact that many employers will give them some type of match, the fact that the money is locked up for the next 10, 20, 30 years, or has there's certain penalties to get to. You almost make it sound like you wish it was harder to get to if you transfer jobs because waiting to retirement. I think that's, you know, if you look at the studies of what people, the average person has at retirement, it's sad. It's
super problem, sad. Problem, Jason, kid, when they change jobs is they're given information that says, well, one of your options is to take the cash and do whatever you want to with it. You know, you're 30 years old, you get someone says, oh, I got $10,000. Now I can take and shoot, yep, do anything with it. You know, it's a huge temptation. I'd like to see that removed.
Yep. What I want to just share with everyone watching on YouTube, if you have clips that you want Mr. Benna to talk to or react to, please put them in the comments or let me know, because I will have another episode most likely with Ted where we'll just look at some like funny videos that people have around 401ks. And I would love to hear from the father of the 401k themselves about your reactions. When I looked up on the internet what some people are saying with 401ks, a lot of people are pro 401ks, and they, for the same reasons. It's for savings. You get the match. Your money grows, tax deferred, and you have something for retirement. The people that are anti-401k, I want to just share with you their talking points. And I want to get your initial thoughts. They say, 401ks have high fees. The same reason you love the 401k, that it kind of like locks up your money, it's not easy to access. They say is a bad thing because they're like, if you're an entrepreneur or you are a real estate investor, you're not able to access your money. They also talk to that the 401k doesn't produce tons of income on itself because you're looking at the net, but you still have to do income planning. And then the last thing that they say is with tax rates where they are, getting tax deferred sometimes isn't a tax advantage because you're deferring to a potential higher tax rate or threshold. And I do know that there's a Roth 401k option for so many people. So what would you say to the people that say 401ks are a scam, you should do other things? Like, do you have any initial thoughts on that?
Well, let's take those one at a time, and I'm not sure I'll remember if you hit me with a bunch of them. You know, fees are an issue. Primarily, you know, smaller employers, you know, the larger employers have, they've had major lawsuits and got hammered, and generally, you know, they're not an issue. Large plan, you know, fees generally are 1% or less. You know, some are as low as, you know, 0.15% or whatever. So fees aren't an issue there. You know, the smaller plans, unfortunately, it can be as high as 2.75%, which is, you know, outrageous. And that, you know, that's just horrible. There's no question about it. There's no reason for it. I mean, it's, frankly, I call it thievery, all right? I mean, definitely it's not. So if you are in a plan, you know, particularly a small employer, I would say dig in and make sure you find out what the fees are. That's definitely an issue. Now, I'm not sure what your next point was yet. About four of them.
Yeah, I'll say the next point is the tax deferral is...
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, first of all, Caleb, I'm not a huge fan of Roth. The number one reason is the fact that most people, when they retire, I don't care what age they are, have significantly less taxable income. You know, so... as a result of that, and the reason for that is average people, when they retire, and I'm talking probably anyone under 100 or 200,000, a big part of their retirement comes from Social Security. It's a big chunk of, you know, not that much, you know, for somebody earning less than 100,000, that's going to come from whatever they've accumulated in their 401k, et cetera. So they're going to have significantly less taxable income. And as a result of that, tax rates would have to go up quite a bit.
Yep.
Now, I wrote 401k and IRAs for Dummies a couple of years ago, and I pointed out in that tax rates now are actually lower than when the Roth came out. So that argument was put out there when Roth, it's been there forever with Roth. Do you expect tax rates to go up or down? Well, the reality is tax rates are lower today than they were when Roth came out. The other issue is I don't trust politicians. You know, Social Security was once tax exempt. Now up to 85% of it can be taxable. And, you know, I can see them saying 10 years from now, we gave you too good of a deal with this, Roth. We're not taxing half of that amount that wasn't taxed. That's an issue. Now, you also mentioned what about, you know, during retirement stream of income. That's the big issue. You know, I have a real concern about that. And one of the things I've recommended is I'd like to see legislation that says somebody that takes part of what they've accumulated and converted into a fixed guaranteed income, maybe the first 1,000 to 2,000 isn't taxable, you know, to encourage them to take that step. You know, politically, that shouldn't be that tough to do. There's not that much revenue loss that would be involved with that, and certainly would be a great, you know, great thing to do for sure.
You made a point that I've never heard, and I love. You're saying a lot of people will use the same argument about they don't necessarily trust the government for the Roth option, but you're saying, hey, I don't know what's going to happen in the future. Take the money today. Meaning, if they're giving you a deduction today, they're not going to go back 30 years and make you repay that deduction. And so, take the money today, knowing that if we have a crisis on our hands, the government ultimately has bailed people out left and right. There could be a world where they give you a benefit on top of it if we have this crisis. Whereas if you have a Roth, number one, you're hoping that they keep their end of the bargain. Number two, it's not a benefit for you because you're already basing on a future benefit and you're kind of hoping that the government keeps up their end of the bargain, which is that's a very interesting thought process. The other thing that I'll say is, you're right, majority of Americans unfortunately aren't going to have a fraction of what they had while they were working. And so the whole concept of you're going to be in a higher tax bracket could be, you know, yes, inflation, just by inflation, we're paying more taxes. But the reality is the average person in retirement is living off of Social Security and a very small stipend from their lack of investments over the last 20, 30, 40 years.
Let me put something else in on that too that I just remembered. And that is the fact that when you start saving, accumulating for the future, my belief is, you know, the big advantage of doing it pre-tax is you're accumulating more. And that can be as much as, you know, for an average person, when you take federal, state, your local taxes, and then if you're an entrepreneur, you're still an entrepreneur, and you add all the FICA on top of that, you know, it can be 30 to 50% differential, you know, with even if you're not a high wager. So my point is, looking out and say, well, at age 65 or so, what situation am I going to be in? I say, hey, be concerned about when you're 55 or so, having a bigger nest egg rather than a smaller one, because life's very unpredictable, as you and I both know. Your health, your spouse, life circumstances change, you lose your job, you know, all kinds of things disrupt your planning. And man, you're in a heck of a lot better position at that stage if you have a 30, 40, 50% bigger nest egg, you know, that may be taxable at that point in time.
Yeah, there's a lot of different options if you have the money versus if you don't. And by default, you'll have more money accumulated if you do the deferral. Now, what other people say on the counter is, hey, taxes could go up significantly. And technically, in a deferral plan, you are giving up some unknown transfer of authority to, you know, politicians that I don't think are very high on either of our list right now. So I think but I think you make really good points. And I really appreciate you articulating that, because I think there's a difference if you're talking to the 1 or 2 or 3% of Americans versus the 97%.
Yeah.
And
most at their wage levels, rates aren't going to go up that much. Yeah. For them to get into them. I mean, reality.
What's your thoughts on annuities and any income planning that people should be aware of? Because you mentioned it yourself, like even potentially seeing or like guaranteeing the first 1,000 or 2,000 of some type of income. What is your thoughts when people do retirement planning and when Ken Fishers of the world and other people like Dave Ramsey say annuities are the worst thing in the world? What is your thought process in someone who's very pro growing your money in equities, but then, you know, in retirement, there might be different things that we need to do?
Well, different types of annuities, and I think the ones they're talking about are the pre-retirement annuities that are designed to compete with mutual funds and be investment-oriented. You know, I definitely do not like them. You know, make no sense, particularly in a tax-free plan, because you already have a tax shield. The ones I'm talking about are ones that guarantee the stream of income the lifetime. And, you know, that's, you know, that products are available have changed quite a bit, as you probably know. And for example, instead of buying an immediate income annuity when you retire, you could buy one that kicks in when you hit a certain age, you know, to help protect you from outliving it. So if you're retiring, let's say it's 65 or 66 or so, rather than locking in an annuity at that point, you could buy one that guaranteed you, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a month income, maybe starting at 65 or 75 or whatever. You know, it takes a lot less money to do that, you know, and that, you know, helps against, you know, outliving, you know, what you have.
Yeah. So you're essentially saying not a big fan of annuities while accumulating money, but annuities can be a good tool when you're taking money out to make sure that you don't outlive your money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now let's transition over. You are an innovator. I think that might be an understatement, but every time we talk, you're working on some new plan. And I don't know if you just like, you just enjoy reading the tax code and thinking about loopholes, or like what gets you on to new ideas? Because we're going to talk about the wheat grains incentive plan, which is very unique. But I'm just curious, before this, what do you like to do? Like, why do you come up with these things? And why do you like coming up with strategies like this?
Okay, well, I know you're a man of faith. So I have about an hour of morning devotions. You know, most of it's prayer time. And last year was a pretty quiet year, and I was getting bored. You know? And, you know, I was praying, you know, hey, look, I'd like to be more engaged. And so I tried a couple volunteering efforts, and none of those, you know, nothing happened with those. And so the first thing that happened that came to mind is I've been a financial supporter of the Jesus Films project for a number of years. And I said, oh, man, you know, I could get excited about helping to promote those because they're a phenomenal way, you know, being able to share the, you know, the good news about Jesus. I mean, they're available now in over 2,000 languages. You know, they can be accessed free through any device, regardless of where somebody is in the world. And so, I mean, it's just such a cost-effective way to do that. So that was the first thing. And then shortly after that, I got approached, Caleb, by a guy named Jason Lee. Jason Lee had a big impact in changing the way people who get paid hourly, you know, at the bottom end, who have to use check cashing services and get ripped off by banks for overdrafts. He established daily pay, which totally flipped, you know, how those people get paid and eliminating, you know, the need for, you know, using those type of services. And, you know, it's really had a big impact. So he's starting something new, approached me about that. And shorter term focused on helping the same group that, you know, when we get to the wheat grains, it's more of a short term thing. Again, you know, helping those down at the bottom to be able to start to build something, you know, kind of like taking reward points type of things and maybe converting them so they can use them to take a trip or whatever. Well, as I was working on that with him, I got an idea for a different program, which is the wheat grains incentive plan. You know, and I presented that to him, and he didn't want to embrace it because he wanted to stick with what he has, because, you know, he raised the venture capital for that, and he didn't want to, you know, hey, look, when you're locked into generating something to satisfy your venture capital people, well, you kind of need to stay on track with it. So I'm off and running now with the wheat grain incentive plan on my own.
Amazing. Let me do my best to share my view of the, like, what I know to be true, and then you can correct me and kind of share where I missed. So when I read what you sent about the wheat grains incentive plan, is it's very much like growing up, we got blessing beans as kids, and every blessing bean had like some type of value tied to it, and then we could cash it in with our parents. This very much is similar. Each grain has a value tied to it, and for the reason of us talking, let's just say that value is a dollar. And what you essentially do is you create an incentive for, and it's optional, or you can disclude people if you want. So it's not one of those like 401k where everyone has the right to be a part of it. But what you're able to do is you're able to create wheat grains, convert that into cash, but ultimately do very similar to a 401k where it can be deferred and invested for their future. The big difference is the downfall to a 401k when you're low income earning is you don't have the money to even start. So you might not even have the money to be able to take advantage of the match. And what this allows employers to do is they save money because they don't have to pay FICA. The employee saves money because they can take compensation not in FICA. And so they're saving money from a standpoint of taxation, but it's allowing them to start saving for their future, and they don't have to necessarily go out of pocket. The employer pays the wheat grains, which then converts every month to this plan. How did I do first time?
You did a great job.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, the neat thing about it is it's totally flexible, unlike 401k. I mean, employers can pick, who they're going to cover under, and it can be designed, the rewards could be based simply on continuing employment. They could also have performance rewards, achieving certain performance. They also could have a profit-oriented piece, to get up. And there also, for example, could be safety awards, for those who maybe are driving big rigs over the road, or forklift or other things where safety is an issue and can be very expensive, if they screw up. So the rewards could be for any reason the employer wanted to give them. And so it's pretty cool. So I could use a couple example of Amazon, for example, could make this available to all their warehouse employees and all their drivers, their delivery, and have kind of some difference in, the way the rewards were granted. And what happens, those rewards would actually go into a qualified retirement plan. And unlike the 401k, after the first year, they could be taken out and used, for whatever purposes the employees wanted to use them. Wouldn't be restricted to hardship withdrawal. So it's pretty neat. Yeah, I'm excited about it because a lot of times employers would like to do something, but they're not allowed because it's, legally it won't work, because of the discrimination rules and so forth. So this avoids, all that baggage. It's pretty neat.
An employee, just hypothetically, let's say they did this and an employer, contributed, let's say, $250 a month, so 250 wheat grains a month to this based on some type of incentive. The employee wouldn't have to put a dollar in, so they're getting money put into an account that's deferred. And you're saying that after a year, that employee could technically access that money. They would have to pay taxes, but they wouldn't have any penalties of accessing that money?
They may. Depends.
Okay.
Yeah, they may have a 10% penalty.
But it's still, for the record, the purpose is for them to save for retirement.
Well, longer term.
Right. But the idea is they don't have that money, could be accessible. And it technically, yes, there could be penalties and fees, but it's money that is not essentially it wasn't money that they, I guess it was part of their compensation.
Well, it's technically not compensation, it's contribution to retirement plan. But if they got it, for example, there can be incentive plans. Companies have cash incentive plans, but and they can be non-taxable. That's what Jason Lee is trying to do with his new program, where they're not taxable at all. But if they're more than the minimis amounts, becomes questionable whether it can be tax-free. Because obviously employers don't want a lot of, service rewards, et cetera, performance rewards that aren't taxable at all. So this avoids that problem. But also regarding the 10%, if it does have a 10% penalty, if employees get something that's taxable as comp, they pay almost 7% of FICA. So it's not that big a difference. Okay. And then the other thing, take a franchise. Somebody has a lot of franchise. They could have maybe 5, maybe 10 service greens a month for the regular employees, higher level for system managers, higher level for managers. I mean, totally flexible.
Let me ask you this. So you know how the first time you get your paycheck, you're always shocked about like, oh, it's so much got taken out. I think I had that same moment in my past paying bonuses to people. You pay bonuses and you're like, not only does the employee feel like, wow, like I thought I was going to get paid this, but the employer has to also pay addition just to hit whatever, like if the bonus is X, I have to pay more. And so it kind of feels like a lose-lose across the board. And especially like with certain bonuses, like they take out the maximum amount of tax. My question to you is, could you use this instead of that? And would the employer, like let's say if you were going to give a bonus of $5,000, could you give 5,000 wheat grains and that would cost the company a straight $5,000. It wouldn't cost us more than that. And then the employee, it wouldn't cost them anything because it would go right into their plan. And then technically what you're saying is that's for long term. But if they did take that money out, there might be penalties and taxes. But at the end of the day, it's not much more than what they would pay via FICA.
Exactly. But the other thing is employer avoids workman's comp, unemployment, you know, all those other things, you know, and, you know, the FICA, the whole baggage, you know, all of it.
So what are the, is this like, what are the potential mosquitoes in this plan? Like, has Congress allowed this? Have lawyers looked over this? Like, what is, if someone's listening to this or watching this and they're like, I want to do this, is there any downfall to doing something like this? Or is it like totally above board, thumbs up? It's just you got to implement it.
Yeah, no, I mean, unlike the 401k, when I did the 401k with the match and employee pre-tax, there was questions around that because Treasury had to issue regulations that would support that. None of that with this. You know, it's totally within the structure legally that's out there and exists.
Okay. And so do people just contact you or what's the next step?
Yeah,
if people want to learn more?
Between time, yeah. I mean, I'm looking to, you know, I'm building some, you know, partnership relationship. So, yeah, where the administration will be handled, but yeah, okay. They need to get a hold of me.
Okay. Yeah. Get a hold of Ted. We'll make sure that we'll have a link down below where if people have questions about this. And also, I would love to learn more about how we can partner on something like this because it's very, very exciting. Just so you know, there is, can this be invested in any type of investments? Because I know in the sheet that you shared with me, it's short-term fixed income investments right now paying 5%, but could they put it in long-term equities if they wanted?
Well, I would limit it to fixed at this point in time. You know, if the amounts start to become more meaningful, obviously other alternatives, you know, could be made available. But I'm anticipating, Caleb, that these would not be in the 5,000 a year or so in terms of what's contributed, probably more like, you know, 1,000 or under, you know, fairly small amounts, and potentially employees taking them out shorter term rather than longer term. And, you know, I wouldn't want to have investment losses to have to deal with. But legally, you know, maybe when somebody had 2,500 or 5,000 or more, whatever, they could have the opportunity to move into other investments.
Got it. What is you said that there's a potential employer tax credit that would ultimately pay for the setup cost of this and the administration fee. Do you want to unpack like what that looks like and how someone would qualify?
Well, if an employer doesn't have a qualified retirement plan, then they would qualify, you know, for the credits that the federal governments provide credits to help employers that don't have plans to set them up.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's what would happen with this.
Okay.
You know, they don't have a plan.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. What would you, knowing what you know, is there ways to pay higher, like if you want to compensate someone, like let's say with big bonuses, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 bonuses kind of deal, is there something that could be created with your knowledge that could help the employer save tax, help the employee save tax, but then ultimately give them same type of flexibility to grow their money, but ultimately access it after the fact? Are you aware of something like that?
Yeah, what happens there, that flips into what's called non-qualified executive top hat plans. You know, many years ago, I mean, a lot of years ago, I designed one, you know, that allows companies to set up plans where senior execs, you know, qualify for those, can select from a menu of different benefits. You know, that the company puts the money in, you know, they give them a certain amount of money. Executives, if they make it a flexible plan, can actually pick different types of benefits, survivor benefits, disability, you know, retirement, maybe education, you know, whatever buckets they want to fund. Company doesn't get a deduction for those. Employee doesn't pay taxes on them. What happens is when the benefits get paid out and they get deducted, you know, then they become deductible by the company and taxable. So the company, in effect, you know, lends them, you know, the tax deferral ability.
Yeah. Wow. This is very fascinating stuff. I know that there's other things that you're working on, and I'll just hand it over to you if you want to talk about it now. Otherwise, we can have you back on and talk about some other things that you're up to. But I find this very interesting, this wheat grains incentive plan, and my hope is for people to be open. That what you gave me 3 pages of info on this, can this be shared with the public, or is this more private?
No, it can be shared. I have a new version of it. I modified a little bit.
So. Okay. So if you want more info, you can, you know, reach out either to Ted, which will give the best way to do that. If you reach out to us, I can share with you what Ted shared with me. And my hope is, again, we're just trying to elevate conversations because we believe every single person, regardless of the situation you're in, should have a better way for the future. And the reality is this is a way for employers to help, especially employees that might not be, you know, crushing it from a standpoint of salary and bonuses, but it's a way for them to compensate and everybody wins in the process. And so I love where your heart's at and love that this came to your mind. Is there anything else on your mind, what you're working on? Anything else you want to talk about while you're on the show?
No, thanks. I think we got it. Yeah, so.
Okay. Well, Ted, I think I asked you this last time, but I would appreciate you re-answering it. If this was your last day on Earth, I know that you've lived so far an amazing life and you have so many things that, you know, to be proud of. And as you reflect back, what are some of the things that you would say to your loved ones if this was your last day on Earth and you couldn't give them your book, you couldn't give them any podcasts, you could just share with them one last time. What would you share with them and why would you share?
Well, obviously, it would be make sure you know where you're going to be going because, you know, this life's going to end. And, you know, I'm confident of where I'm heading, not because of anything I've done, but simply because I put my faith and trust in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And, you know, that totally changed my life. You know, I did that in my late 20s. So that's certainly what I would share with them if they weren't, you know, they already didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing when you have that solid foundation, how it very much feels like we're playing with house money. It's because at the end of the day, there's so many things that are amazing with life, but if you don't have that foundation, it becomes meaningless pretty quickly. And so, Ted, thank you. Thank you for that. We'll also make sure that the Jesus film, you'll get me the right links that we can promote that. If you feel called to give, or if you feel called to help support this ministry in any way, or if you've not seen the Jesus film, I would highly encourage you to check it out. It's an incredible film.
And I'm grateful. A whole series of them now.
Yeah.
There's not just one, there's a whole series. And there's also a youth series, you know, for young people. So, all right, I got to run.
All right. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to the Better Wealth Podcast. It would mean the world to me if you could hit subscribe, leave a review, and share this with the people that you know and love.